Hey everybody, this is Paul Boyer, Mad Money Machine, episode 182 for Wednesday, January 5th, 2011, the day the new Congress swears in and tries to repeal Obamacare. We'll see. Pre-1964 silver coins are worth 23 times face value. Pre-1982 pennies are worth almost 3 times face value. And nickels are worth, about 6.7 cents instead of just 5 cents. Yes, coming up on this episode of the Mad Money Machine, I will tell you about my day in traffic court. Everybody loves a good traffic court story. We will certainly talk about the 2010 Lazy Portfolio results. And we'll have a tool for you that I promised. All here on the Mad Money Machine. Remember when I was a little kid back in the 1960s, we would sift through our change and we would find the dimes that were pre-1965, I guess is a better way to say it. We would sift through our change and we'd keep those dimes or quarters that were made prior to 1965 because they were mostly silver in content. It was 1965, I think I'm getting the date right, that they changed to some copper clad composition that wasn't actually worth the amount of metal that it was made from. And so we would keep that set aside, all those old silver coins. And I remember, being excited every time we found one. And I remember, years later, still, we would sift through and save the wheat ear pennies. But they're only for numismatic value. In other words, coin collector value. So it's a difference in looking at the metal content of a coin to see its value versus some unique old attribute of the coin. What I'm mainly interested in at this point is the metal content. Well, we're doing the same thing these days with pennies and nickels, even though the reward is not as great. Maybe someday, 40 years from now, a penny, pre-1982 penny, will be worth 23 times its face value. Maybe sooner than that, who knows. But the government, of course, I've talked about this a long time ago, how it costs more than a penny to make a penny. Of course, there's production costs and all that, but I think right now the actual copper content of a penny is more than a penny, even to make it. So it seems a little bit crazy. Of course, now the same can certainly be said of a $50 gold piece, if you know what that is. The American Eagle coin, if I'm recalling correctly, it's either $20 or $50 marked on that. Doesn't matter, because the amount of gold in it is way more than even $50. It's right now it's about $1,380, 1 ounce of gold. And right now, nickels, even the 2010 nickels, apparently, are worth 6.7 cents. So every time I get a nickel in change, which is surprisingly not that often. Most of the time, change is made up of quarters, dimes, and pennies. But every so often, you'll get a nickel, and I just set those aside. Set those in a jar, because someday those, too, might be worth 23 times face value, and we'll wish we'd have kept them set aside. Well, I am finally all in on the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio. Now, the Paul Boyer Permanent Portfolio is just a slight revision, slight variation on the Harry Brown, more popular permanent portfolio. Harry Brown recommended that we don't know the future, and there are four economic cycles, and one thing invests in each economic cycle. So you just put one quarter of your net worth in each of the things, one quarter in stocks, one quarter in cash, one quarter in bonds, one quarter in gold. Well, my slight variation on that is to be a little more aggressive in the stock part. Half of the stocks I put in small cap value, which Fama French shows to be a better deal in the long run. And the other half of the stock component I put into emerging markets, specifically Vanguard's VWO or maybe the EEM from iShares. So, how have the lazy portfolios done? How did they do in 2010? The winner of the ones I track was the all-stock highest risk portfolio, the IFA Index Portfolio 100 Bright Red. It came in at 23% gain for 2010, which is fantastic. And it turns out that the gain since June of 2010 is even more than 23%. Why is that? Well, the looking at the chart of it, the IFA Index Portfolio 100, from the beginning of 2010, it went up to about 11 or 12% in April. From April to June, though, it swung down violently to almost minus 5% for the year. And then from the minus 5% up to the 23%, that's a 28% swing in a very short time frame, in about a half a year, 28% swing. Compare that to the chart of the True Blue Harry Brown permanent portfolio invested in exchange-traded funds. It just looks like a ramp. Almost from the beginning of the year, it just looks like a straight slope upward to its final destination with a gain of 14.5% for the year. Very respectable and larger, I must say, than the long-term average for Harry Brown permanent portfolio. Each of the components of that portfolio, by the way, describe those. The VTI, which is the total stock market exchange traded fund, that component of it went up 17.4% for the year. Nice gain on that individual component. The long term bond component invested in the exchange traded fund TLT, it was up 9.0% in 2010. Very respectable, by the way, for bonds. And I think that's down from August's or August, September timeframe's peak in bonds. The bonds kind of dropped off toward the end of the year. The cash component even did well. Instead of just putting money under the mattress, what many typically recommend for the Harry Brown permanent portfolio is to put one quarter of it into short-term treasuries, 1 to 3 year treasury T-bills. And the exchange-traded fund that we use for that is SHY. And it was up 2.3% for 2010. That's pretty good for cash. Then finally, the gold component. GLD is the one I've been tracking. That next year, I'm probably going to track IAU just because the expense ratio is a little lower on it. GLD was up 29.3% for the year. Again, making the total composite Harry Brown permanent portfolio up 14.5% on a nice smooth ride. If you look at the chart, you didn't have to worry about this portfolio over the course of 2010. You just took your gains month in and month out, basically. Yeah, there was a month or two where it went down a couple of percentage points maybe, but you were able to sleep holding the Harry Brown permanent portfolio in 2010. My variation on it was up, about 1.3% more. It was up a total of 15.8%. The two stock components of it, the small cap value fund, VBR is the one I use. It itself was up 25% for the year. That's better than the VTI total stock market, up 17.4%. And the emerging market wasn't up as much. It was up 19.5%. So the composite of the two stock funds I used was up 22%. Boy, that's a lot of numbers. Woo! And I'll give you one more number, though. How about silver compared to gold? Remember, gold was up about 29%. SLV, the silver ETF, in 2010 was up 82.5%.
Well, what do you think of our friend Cornelius? Seems all he thinks about is silver and gold.
Silver and gold, silver and gold. Everyone wishes for silver and gold. How do you measure its worth? Just by the pleasure it gives here on earth. Silver and gold, silver and gold, mean so much more when I see silver and gold decorations on every Christmas tree.
What's a Christmas tree without tinsel and pretty silver and gold decorations? Can't really call it a Christmas tree now, can you? And think of all the fun and joy that would be lost on Christmas morning if all the young folks didn't get to see that sparkling, happy tree.
Silver and gold, silver and gold, mean so much more when I see silver and gold decorations on every Christmas tree.
Ah, yes, silver and gold on every Christmas tree. Well, I've posted all of the Lazy Portfolio results for 2010 out at madmoneymachine.com. You can take a look at the graph there. They all are positive. I think the worst performer for 2010 was strangely and surprisingly the the Larry Swedrow. Here it is, Larry Swedrow Minimum Fat Tails Portfolio, and it was up only 8%. Now Larry Swedrow invented this portfolio that did some back testing and tried to replicate the Sharpe ratio, I guess, the risk-return performance of the Harry Brown portfolio without using gold. He invests, like I do, in the same stocks. He invests 15% in small-cap value, 15% in emerging markets, but then the other 70% is in sort of medium-term bonds, you know, cash and bonds. And I think that's what didn't do so well for him in that portfolio in the past year. Yeah, you got to have a little bit of gold in there. Got to have a little bit of gold, and you got to have some long-term bonds. Even though the chief officer of Vanguard, Gus Slobodzor, recently said, told his customers, beware of bonds, be cautious of bonds. And just like anybody else, though, I don't think he can predict the future. A case can be made that bonds won't do so poorly, as everyone expects that they will. And so it doesn't matter. Invest one quarter in everything and then just forget about it. I tell you, the joy, the peace of mind that comes from being invested in this portfolio after, what, 5-6 years of constantly worrying about where the money should be invested, and I got to keep track of the news so that I know whether stocks might go down soon or not, and worrying about that. Now it's just a matter of, you know, place your bets and let it ride, because it's all you can do. There's nothing else you can do to predict the future, so why try to? And it's really a comforting feeling, and especially in my personal portfolio, which, like I said, I just finally got invested into it in about November timeframe, from being worried about getting into it, strangely enough. But being mostly in cash for the beginning of the year, my portfolio, personal portfolio, is up about 11.4% maybe for 2010, which is significantly more than what I hope for. I hope for 6% per year all the way through to the other side of retirement. And if I can get 6% per year in my investments, assuming no major inflation, then I'll be doing okay. I guess I should calculate that in real return numbers, you know, maybe 2% real return after inflation. So I'm happy with 2010, and I hope 2011 is good, and I hope it's good for you too, and I hope you can find your way to get invested in a permanent portfolio. Oh, by the way, the permanent portfolio fund, if you're just kind of a beginner and you don't want to do it yourself, the permanent portfolio fund, ticker symbol PRPFX, was the second best lazy portfolio in 2010. It's a little more aggressive. It does, in fact, invest in aggressive growth stocks, and it has 5% in silver, which, of course, did well in 2010. It might not do as well in 2011. Silver might correct. Who knows? No one knows. But the permanent portfolio fund went up 18.5%. Compare that to IFA's 23% gain for their riskiest portfolio. Not too bad for one of the least volatile portfolios. You know, if you look over the past 10 years, let me bring that up right now. The PRPFX over the past 10 years had a standard deviation of only 5.17%. Compare that to many of the other all stock funds, which had a standard deviation of three or four times that much. Standard deviation, of course, measures the swing, the ups and downs of the portfolio over time. And you know, on a previous show, I talked about how I like max drawdown as a better indicator of how a portfolio did in the past. It's something you can really relate to. What's the maximum loss you would have seen from peak to trough in the holdings of the portfolio? And I talked about how I like that better than standard deviation. Well, now there's finally the connection dawned on me in one of the forums. One person pointed out that max drawdown can be roughly estimated by using standard deviation. You simply multiply standard deviation times 3. And that's roughly right. I look back at this, and it's a good rule of thumb. So if the standard deviation on PRPFX was 5%, then the maximum drawdown that would have occurred in that time span was 15%. For these other mostly stock portfolios with a standard deviation of more like 20%, well, the maximum drawdown, the maximum loss, would have been 3 times that, 60%. And don't you remember, in 2008, that's about what happened, 50 or 60% drop in some of these all-stock portfolios. So that's a good indicator, max drawdown. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine tool crib. I mentioned on the last show that I found a cool tool that I've been using. It's an outliner. A long time ago, I mentioned how I was using Google's task manager for my list of things. And the neat thing about the task manager is it's on the cloud. It's in the cloud. Google keeps my list for me, and I can get to it then on my computer or on my iPad or on my iPhone, and I can update it in any place so that if I update it on the computer and I'm out at the store with my iPhone, I can bring up the list and see what's on the list. The problem with it was it didn't really have a whole lot of good outlining features, namely the ability to collapse a level or to indent more than one level. Well, finally, there's a tool that does this, and it's not free, but Carbon Fin Outliner. It's free on the web. It's just not as useful on the web. The actual iPad implementation of it, which I think is $4.99. I could be wrong. It might be less than that, but let's just assume the iPad version of Carbon Fin Outliner is $4.99. It allows you to easily drag and drop levels and sections and indent and synchronize then with the cloud, and always have with you on your iPhone, which you could also purchase for $4.99, I think. Two separate applications, unfortunately, not a universal application. But it is nice to have this outlining tool available anywhere. It's one I recommended. It's the most highly recommended outliner that I know of right now. And I've been using outliners since the days of PC Outline on the IBM XT monochrome screen from about 1984, I think, is when I used that. Maybe 85. BBO, Brown Bag Outline, or PC Outline. Nope, Carbon Fin is the one for me, and I hope that you'll take a look at it. It's free on the web, but not free on the iPad or iPhone, unlike other tools I've given you so far. That's what I want. Well, here now is a something I recorded from December 8th, the day that I was in traffic court. Everybody loves a good traffic court story, right? Well, here's mine. Back in October, got pulled over for turning right on red, where it says no turn on red, a light. Just going shopping, middle of the day, beautiful day, fully aware of my surroundings, in control, seatbelt wearing, a whole bit. Well, the officer pulled me over to the right shoulder, asked me, said, do you know why I pulled you over? I said, well, for turning right on yellow? He said, no, you were turning right, the light was red when you turned right. And there's a no turn on red sign there. Well, I, you know, didn't protest or anything. I just sat there, and he came back with a ticket. He says, now you can, your court date is December 8th, or you can pay $91 and not have to show up in court. Well, I decided to take my chances and show up in court, and that was today. I just got back from the courthouse. 8:30 in the morning, show up. And of course, the way the judge, it was a female judge, by the way, the way the judge worked it was, anybody wants to plead guilty, we'll take you first. All the non-guilty pleaders, we'll keep you to the last. So of course, I was there for 3 hours waiting and hearing a lot of horror stories, by the way. Some ladies got thrown in prison or jail, rather, for a couple of days. And some guy came out in an orange and white striped suit and had to go back to jails. Yeah, boy, you see a lot of different sides of life in a courthouse. Well, finally, my turn came. And Mr. Boyer, how do you plead? Not guilty, Your Honor. And she said, well, I'll hear the testimony from the officer. And he read that the car in front of me went through the yellow light, but when I went through, it had turned red. And the sign says no right on red. And so the judge asked me, do you have any questions for the officer? And I thought for a second. I said, officer, do you have any video evidence? He said, no. I thought for a second. Officer, do you have any photographic evidence? He said, no, the only photo I've got is of the intersection itself. Of course, that doesn't do any good. I turned to the judge, said, Your Honor, no further questions. And she said, do you want to make a statement? And I, you know, raise your right hand, blah, blah, blah. And I said, Your Honor, I've been through the intersection many times. I'm fully aware of the lights and the signs. And I respect your time. And I wouldn't be here wasting your time if I had any doubt that the light was yellow. And she said, well, because you must be proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, I find you innocent. You're free to go, Mr. Boyer. I ran out of that place like Rocky. Hands up in the air, I'm free. I was the only person I saw to get out of that courtroom without paying any costs, any fines, any court costs, etc. A lot of people pled guilty to turning right on red and so forth, and she would impose a fine or at least court costs, and I got out for free. So now I've got $91 in my pocket, and I can't wait to go buy some. Look at the stars, look how they shine for you, and everything you do. Yeah, they were all yellow. Yes, yes, indeed, the light was yellow, and I was free to go. Like I said, I was the only person that left without paying anything. Pretty proud of myself there. Stand up for yourself. Don't admit guilt, either to the officer or in the courtroom. And good luck to you in your days of court. And drive safe out there, by the way. Well, here's something that I read on the web a while back. Maybe you saw it, maybe you didn't. It's called the Department of Free. It's appropriate for these times. Years ago, a wiser man than you or I devised a plan to dole out goods at zero cost to those of us whose jobs were lost. It seemed benign, so nice and kind. The plan grew to include the blind, the old, the lame, then you and me. And they called this plan the Department of Free. It started as a helping hand to needy folks across the land, so those who could not make ends meet would not be forced out on the street. Unemployment benefits were just a start, because now it's free food, free homes, free surgery, rebates, bailouts, loans, all free. Now half of us just stand in line all day long and gripe and whine about the stuff we feel we're owed, the list of which has growed and growed. The line winds hither, the line winds yon, and by it comes upon a door above which we can see those magic words, Department of Free. Once inside, a shopping spree of endless handouts. It's all free. Drunken on entitlement, we grab a meal, a house, a stint. The other half, we're all employed. Hearing this, you're overjoyed to know that at least some of us have jobs that can never cause a fuss. But one last thing you ought to know about our economic Alamo, the place where we all work, you see, is in the accursed Department of Free. I push papers while he counts beans. She helps seniors, and they help teens. Ah, it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a nation to run hog wild. Paul pays Peter, and Peter pays Paul, yet neither makes anything at all. Round and round the money goes, but where it come from, no one knows. It all runs out eventually. Can't simulate prosperity. The shopping spree was just a dream, a baseless potlatch Ponzi scheme. With nothing left to give away, the Department of Free itself must say, we're all laid off. The end is near. There's no point working even here. The last employed man, not offshore, has just one more remaining chore. Switch off the lights and turn the key in the broke Department of Free. From Medicare and Medicaid came Medicood and Medishood. Now Medimust, and we've gone bust. We're trust fund kids without a trust. Well, golly, that's all I had in my list of things to talk about on this episode of the Mad Money Machine. I hope your 2010 was really great, and I hope your 2011 is going to be even greater. I also hope to add some things onto my Cartman Finn outliner to be able to talk about in an upcoming show soon. I know one thing I'm going to be watching is a little bit more C-SPAN, probably. Now with Ron Paul, charge of the Subcommittee on Monetary Policy. That is going to be just so much fun to watch as he tries to steer us back to the monetary policy that the United States was originally designed to adhere to. We'll see. Well, this has been Paul Boyer, saying it takes money to make money, and it takes silver and gold to make a mad money machine. I will probably see you, maybe another time in January, or certainly before the middle of February, before Valentine's Day, let's say. In the meantime, if you'd like to get in touch with me, I have an email address. It is feedback@madmoneymachine.com. Check out the website, madmoneymachine.com. Follow me at Twitter, which is, of course, twitter.com/madmoneymachine. And there's, of course, a Facebook page, which doesn't get used a whole lot, but I do post upcoming show announcements there and so forth. So that's about all I got. See you next time.